Welcome back to Championship Bow Hunting. Today we've got a good friend of mine and special guest, Braden Forsyth. Braden and I, we shared a hunt last year, end of the year. Braden went with me this last weekend when we were scouting for sheep. and Braden's just an all-around, you know, good athlete, good hunter, you know, this is my opinion of Braden. He's kind of, you know, keeps himself low, you know, not a big me guy, if you will, taking selfies of himself, solid dude, good hunter, you know, proved it a little bit there at the Colorado Train to Hunt, you know, finishing on the podium. Hey, Braden, what you got going on this morning?
How you doing this morning? Good morning. Just drinking coffee, getting ready for the day. Getting ready for a beautiful Friday here in Colorado. Trying to figure out what the weekend holds for training, hunting, shooting, all the stuff that we do. So
that's it, man. It's creeping up on us. And hey, speaking of, I was doing the same thing last night. You know, it's been a long time since I punched myself in the face with a release, but man, I did it last night. And I tell you what, I can knock some dudes out if I wanted to, because I almost took myself out.
What happened there?
Man, I was, you know, just trying to shoot some every day. And I got about 25 minutes in later in the afternoon yesterday to where I got to where I can shoot some long range. So set the block out there at 100 yards, and my son's in the truck, and, you know, I'm shooting, and I see my D-loop starting to fray a little bit, of which the release that I use, it doesn't have a burr, but it's hard on D-loops. And I saw it fraying a little bit. I was like, no, I got another 10, 15 shots, no problem. So I shot, you know, and this was halfway through, so I had already shot 10 or 15 arrows. Go down and pull them, come back. So this is the last arrow I was going to shoot. Everything was kind of dialed in pretty good, like I wanted it. And I go to draw back with the last arrow, and sure enough, man, it was, I mean, and it was lined up perfectly in my mouth. So I come back, bow comes flying out of my hand, and I kind of see, I saw stars for a second. I turn around, and my son's got his huge eyes, man. He's like, "What happened?" It was hilarious, man, and I looked, you know, and first thing I kind of touched my lip to see if I had any blood, but luckily the release didn't catch me. It was just kind of the back of my hand. But I tell you
man,
it was exciting for a few seconds last night.
Yeah, I've done that. I think we've all maybe done that once or twice in our archery career, and it'll wake you up, that's for sure. Well, it'll put you to sleep for a little bit, and then it'll wake you up.
Yeah, but it was that's what I thought. I thought I was going to sleep for a second, but it was exciting, man. But hey, you know, we got to head up, you know, to the high country last weekend and do some scouting. And I know that's not something that I don't get up to scout as much as I'd like to. But I know that you've spent your decent time in the woods scouting in the past, and you know, learning the terrain, and you know, it's the, like you said, the things that that help you. Put you in a successful situation for hunting, and what are some of the benefits that you see, you know, that people can benefit, you know, from just by getting out there more?
I think just being in the woods, honestly. I mean, I think that is a lot to it. It's kind of ironic because I was talking to my mom, and you know, I didn't grow up in a big hunting family as far as my close household. Is kind of something that there was always in me, and I never, you know, I picked it up kind of on my own, and then have met a variety of people who taught me things and picked up things throughout the years. So she asked me, you know, said, "Why do you guys scout? Why do you go to the mountains? Why do you do that? If you can't hunt the animals, what's the point of being there?" And, you know, I thought it really got me thinking. I'm like, you know, it's really just to be out there and be in the woods, and you're learning about the animals, and spending time out there and seeing the terrain you're going to be hunting in is a huge advantage for us as hunters, especially if you know, get to know things intimately enough, like winds and how they're going to be, how the winds behave in high mountain situations. You know, that's in your mind when you're up there. And then when hunting season comes, you're more comfortable in situations. There's been instances where I've gone into an area that I knew, you're just more comfortable there, and you can actually do more hunting rather than doing your scouting during hunting season. You walk into an area that you've never been, you've got 4 days to hunt it. You really spend the first 2 days, give or take, learning the area. You know, if you run into animals, it's by accident, and you're still learning the area, and you have a tendency to make a mistake hunting them if you're still learning the area and you don't know the area very well. So I just think it's an advantage that way. And I've learned that over the years, being that, you know, there's been a lot of hunts that I haven't scouted, just gone in blind, you know, and been actually fortunate enough to be lucky and kill some animals in those situations. But like I said, I think there was more luck involved with that than really hunting skill. Now, I'm not downplaying luck, because we all need it, especially as archers, but it's it increases your odds quite a bit if you're able to get into an area and daylight of opening morning, you're ready to hunt, rather than you're ready to learn the area, if that makes sense.
Most definitely. And that's, like you said, if there's a, you know, you can look at terrain on a map, you can use internet for, you know, Google Earth, whatever, and get an idea. But when you really start hiking to a point, let's say you pick a point out on the map or on Google Earth that you want to get to, and that's really you want to focus on because you think it's got some potential for good watering or, you know, feeding areas or, you know, bedding areas kind of in between. And as you hike up there, if there's a little bench or there's something that you can't really see on a map until you get there and you got animals bedded there and you blow them out, man, it's trouble. You know,
yeah.
You may have shot yourself in the foot just because you don't know what's up or over the next rise, and you go through there maybe a little bit too fast, or like you said, the wind's just not right. Maybe it swirls in a certain area. But what about, you know, changes from year to year? Because this is something we talked about when we were up there. You know, I hunted some in the past, this is years ago, up in the northwestern part of the state. And in the national forest up there, you know, sheep herders tend to move they get licenses to move the sheep through the national forest and graze through there. And it would really suck when you got there the wrong time, when the sheep happen to be, and I'm not talking about one herd, it's two or three herds of sheep that they push through there and they move the animals off the mountain. But had I been there early enough or a couple, 2 or 3 weeks before, I could have, you know, talked to the sheep herder, knowing when they're going to be in a certain area, or even if, you know, if they're in there at all that year. So, I mean, what are some of the things you've seen from just changes from one year to the next, you know, from hunting an area?
Yeah, you bring up a great point. I mean, Google Earth, Topo Maps, all that is, going back to that's great info. That's a great start. And then, obviously, we all have very limited time to run around the woods, and so that's some supplemental scouting. But like you said, you know, having a plan B and a plan C and a plan D, you know, you can have a whole alphabet of plans, because something's going to change. Like you said, there's the sheep herders moving through. There's weather changes change everything. People, I mean, we hunt, most of us hunt on public land. Everybody can get to it. Everybody can access it. You don't know. And with more and more and more of us getting healthier and getting more fit and getting up into the backcountry and getting into the places that we used to go that there wasn't people, there's getting to be more people doing the same thing, which is great, but you have to adjust your hunting style for that. So if you focus on one specific area and you put all your eggs in that basket, and you just go in there from your Google Earth search or your map search, and you get in there and it's not what you expected, or you got three other guys in there hunting the same drainage or same elk or same deer or whatever, I mean, you got to have your backup plans. And the backup plans is really where the boots on the ground scouting comes in, because you've been able to look at those as well. I mean, I don't know how many hours and gallons of gas I've wasted because I went up into an area, and days of hunting, actually, I wasted because I went up into an area blind, and it was either wasn't what I expected, or there was got too many guys there, didn't like it, or so I backed out, and, you know, and I'm sitting there panicking at midnight, staring at a map with my headlamp going, where's my plan B, where, you know, I didn't have that planned out, I didn't have it scouted out, and then I'm going into this new area blind. So there's a multitude of things that go into that scouting that just make it harder, I guess. It's time consuming. It really is, and it's tough just to know, but to have a plan B at least scouted out too, at least looked at, is definitely a good start for things like that. Just changes, like you said, I've dealt with the sheep, and the sheep are, I mean, that's a tough one. Like you said, talking to people, that's a huge one. Now I can't talk to the sheep herders very well because I don't speak Spanish like you, but but talking to people, I mean, running into people on the mountain, other hunters, yeah, they're there hunting too, and sometimes it can be frustrating, but, you know, if you learn something what they're doing or what they're, you know, what they know, hikers are great, and just people on the mountain you run into or out in the areas that may know the areas, and you may read between the lines of what they tell you and be able to change your plan or make your plan from that. So.
No, for sure, and that's where, you know, you brought up hikers, and when we were up last weekend, you know, we were up there, and it wasn't an easy, I mean, it wasn't, you know, the impossible hike, right? But it was 12 to 13,000 feet, pretty tough hiking, and kind of remote when you look at it. When you stand back on the peak behind where the trailhead ends, doesn't look like there's a lot of spots that you can hike up to where we got to, right? It was looked a little bit tough to navigate, but we're up there glassing and turn around, and there's two hikers at the peak, you know, talking in normal kind of loud voices and having a good time. They just going up there to hike a couple 13,000 peaks, and you know, that's one of those things, like you said, that if you don't have a plan B, because those guys come through, like, because we're on public land, and blow out animals just because they're casually hiking and having a casual conversation on the mountain, and we're trying to be stealthy and quiet, you know, we need to have plan B and be able to move, because you never, there's certain things you just don't have any control over.
Yeah. I mean, we're in adventure filled state. I mean, people are going to use it, whether it's us hunting, running around with our bows, whether it's hikers, what fish, you know, anglers, whatever it may be. And I'm all for that. It's just something that so we have to adapt to. And you know, I've had plenty of blown opportunities on animals from that, but it is what it is, and it's part of what we do. And you just try again, but you have to have those options there so that you can try a new area, or you can try something different if those things come up.
Yeah, and speaking of kind of, you know, adapting and making changes, you know, we were up there and got, you know, we were up there for, you know, two and a half days, whatever it was. You know, our setups were essentially from our sleep systems and our I would say what we were wearing, you know, boots or clothing. There's probably going to be minimal changes, you know, if for here, you know, when, you know, if we get up here in a couple of weeks to start chasing sheep. But what are some of the things that you thought of, you know, because something comes up every time. Oh, I could have brought this, or I forgot that. What is something that, you know, from whether it was your food or whether it was, you know, anything, you know, maybe it was a clothing item that you decided, hey, you know, I think this is going to be better. Is there anything that you think that you're going to change, you know, next opportunity we get up to get on the mountain?
I absolutely bring more food because we're staying for more days. And I was actually a little short on food on this trip, but it was something I wanted to try and see my energy level after a few days. Food is always a tough one for me. I eat a lot every day just because of the amount of energy I put out with, you know, workouts and shooting and work and going just constantly. I eat a lot every day, so I've had struggles in seasons because of that. It's hard to pack that much food, and so I had learned to start in the month of July, kind of start trying to adjust my metabolism by not eating as much when I'm here, so that when I get into the mountains, my body learns to run on itself, rather than needing that much food. Now, after 4 or 5 days, it burns, but you got to try and get as much food in you as you can up there. But food is always a struggle for me. But I think, you know, I think I have a pretty good idea what that's going to look like. A few more butthole sandwiches will definitely be in the pack. That's good calories right there. Butthole sandwiches, people don't know. Just peanut butter on a bagel with some honey and some bacon. That was kind of, the name was devised from Aaron, or Big Brother Aaron. His daughter actually came up with that name. But anyway, so there'll be a few more of those in there. As far as clothing goes, I've actually looked at a few different pieces of clothing, but I've been looking at them to try and eliminate two pieces and turn them into one. There's a couple companies out there that have some stuff that I like. But by the time the hunt comes, I probably won't be changing anything. I think my clothing was good. I kind of judge that on this. And scouting trips are great for that. I mean, you get to wear your clothes and what the area's weather is kind of going to be. You don't know, obviously, in August and September, but you get to wear the clothes and you get to see what works. You get to see what doesn't. You get to see what you won't pack in and what you will. There's been so many trips that I've packed clothes in that I didn't even wear, and then that becomes like, well, don't need that anymore. So that gets checked, that gets tossed out on the next trip. But luckily, I wore everything on this trip at some point in time, and it was used. So that usually gives me a pretty good idea of what's going in with me next time. I may add or exchange some more. Maybe one more base layer merino or blend, just because of the hiking that's involved. You sweat, you get wet, and then you sit up on those peaks. And yeah, I mean, you saw how cold we got sitting up on those peaks after those hikes. It was really nice to yank off a wet shirt after you hiked up the mountain and let it dry and put on a dry one. I seem to stay warmer longer than if I just left the wet stuff on. So stuff like that, that's kind of, you just adapt and you look at your things that you used and things that you didn't. It's kind of what I base it on.
And it's things, just tweaking little things. It's just always tweaking something.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's, you know, those comfort items that, you know, those things that make you more comfortable in turn make you more confident, because if you're warmer or if you, you know, if you feel better, you eat a little bit more. And, you know, and just like, you know, we had talked before about, you know, some luxury items. You know, you and I both are coffee drinkers, and just because we're up at 12 or 13,000 feet doesn't mean we shouldn't be able to have a cup of coffee from now on.
That's even more of an excuse to have it.
Yeah. And that was one thing that, because, you know, you and I both, I mean, we all had stoves, me, you, and Aaron, and we were right before we were start the climb, that we went up, and we decided to, you know, drop a couple, you and I decided to drop our jet boils, and stash them in a certain, you know, certain area that we thought that would be, yeah, nobody's going to get to them, nothing's going to happen to them. We went up for, you know, a day and a half up high, and when we came back down, marmots had tried to, you know, steal our jet boils and decided to chew yours up pretty good.
Yeah, the marmots wanted to learn how to use the jet boil and cook their food from now on, I guess. But, Yeah, you know, it's especially when you're hunting with a group of people and a group that, you know, we all have the same mentality, but we've never really all hunted together to be 100% comfortable with just reaching in someone's pack and grabbing their stove. If they're like, hey, we'll just carry one stove, I'll carry the stove. It's a great idea. And if you have that understanding and that comfortability with the people you're with, it works well because you don't have to carry as much. But, you know, like you said, you know, or like we were talking about, you know, there's points, even when we're shooting up glass, and that I pull out my jet boil and I boil up a cup of coffee, you know, just to rejuvenate, warm up, because the wind gets blistery up there up top. And it's something that you've got to think about. Is it worth not carrying that around? Are you willing to carry that little bit of extra weight around up those 13,000 foot up to those 13,000 foot peaks? You know, if that extra, you know, 3/4 of a pound or a pound are not going to bother you, and it's worth that cup of coffee or whatever it may be, then do it. You know, and people ask me, they're like, all the time, they're like, well, what do you take this, do you take that? And I'm like, I take whatever I'm willing. It's a game of pros and cons. It really is. I mean, you can take everything in the kitchen sink, and if you're willing to carry it, then bring it. And if you need it for that comfort and that confidence, then bring it. But what happens after carrying it for 4 or 5 days? How does it feel on you? How do you feel? Is your confidence up? Does that one cup of coffee keep your confidence up on day 4 or 5? For me, it does. A lot of times a cup of coffee will rejuvenate a whole day of hunting, whereas some guys don't need that, and they've got something else that helps them. But, you know, sometimes it's just that balancing act of knowing what you're willing to keep on you and what you're not.
Yeah, and that's it. And it, you know, that the luxury items like having your own stove or having a little bit extra food, you know, an extra shirt to change out of, you know, that's where anybody who's looking into or considering, you know, backpack style hunting, you know, I guess my advice would be, you know, start with your essential items that you cannot go without, right? Your first aid kit, your minimal amount of food that you need, your sleep system. You know, for me on this next trip, when it's actually going to be hunting season, I actually take a little kit with some repair stuff for my bow and my arrows. So I take the essentials, I put them down, and I lay them out, you know, and then I'll actually pack my bag and kind of see where it weighs. And then from there, I'll say, okay, well, I'm in my comfort zone as far as weight. I can add a little bit extra food, or, you know, yeah, I'm going to take the little bit bigger container of fuel for my stove as opposed to a smaller one, just because, yeah, it might get cranked up 3 or 4 times a day, you know, 2-3 times a day for food and then another time for coffee, right? So mm-hmm. Those are the tweaking items when you start to lay things out and say, okay, well, I went from, for example, 45 pounds fully loaded for 6 or 7 days to, and that's pretty lightweight for, you know, a 6 or 7 day hunt, to, okay, I'm going to go 47 pounds because I added a little bit extra food. I upsized my fuel container and I took an extra, you know, merino base layer or something. Okay.
Yeah.
You know where you're at.
Yep.
So it's just that. And like you said, the scouting, the trial and error, you know, no better time to go out and try out your gear and test out how you feel with certain amount of weight after a couple of days on your back, carrying your life around, than going out and trying it. So it's something that, like I said, this year I've got a couple trips that I'm going to be able to do this way. I usually have a couple hunts that are more day hunts, or, you know, like we roll out to Nebraska here in a few months. It's going to be more of your tree stand hunting, you know, staying in like a lodge, or actually we're going to be staying with Ron up there with Bow Country Outfitters, who's one of the outfitters that's participating in the championship bow hunting giveaways So it just depends, being able to adapt to all different types of hunting and be versatile enough to be able to, you know, identify what's out there and mold yourself to the outdoors and try to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, we're all internet junkies, whether we want to admit it or not. But I mean, there's so much information out there on quote unquote the right way to do something, the right way to pack, the right way to do a backpack hunt, or how somebody does it. I mean, and that's what it is, how somebody else does it, which is a great. I mean, there's guys out there that I take info from that have been doing it longer than I have, that have more experience with it than I do, and they've gone through a lot of the trials of that. So, but you got to keep in mind when you read these things that sometimes those guys have a different threshold than you do, or they have different needs than you do on the mountain. And so you try, you know, there's been a lot of times where I've read an article from some guy or a blog from some guy, and I'm like, well, that seems like a great idea. And then I try it, and I'm like, that was a terrible idea for me. I mean, for them, if it works great. But for me, I'm like, that was a terrible idea. I hated that. I can't do that anymore. But a lot of things that I have in my pack or that I carry every year, or systems, like you said, that I know are going to go with me year in and year out, come from a lot of that stuff. And there's actually ironic, kind of interesting article I was just reading today in Eastman's, that again, our big buddy, the big brother Aaron wrote, Don't Chase the Rabbit, which is about, you know, everybody wants to go as light as possible, but there's a balance between light and comfortable, and included in that is safe, on the mountain, depending on the hunt, depending on what you're doing. And that's a lot of what the scouting is as well. I mean, us going up there and knowing the area and seeing the area and kind of getting a feel for what we're in for gives us an idea of what our pack's going to look like. You know, it gives us a better idea of what we can trim down, you know. And for instance, for your hunt this year, you know, you're going to have to be carrying your bow. You're going to be carrying, you know. So I think we talked about things that I can carry for you to take some of the weight off of your load, knowing that it's your hunt and your tag, and we're there support staff essentially for you to get that done. So, you know, if I'm carrying an extra jet boil or a jet boil, your jet boil for your needs, but just because that takes a little bit of load off of you, because you got your bow, your kit. You know, you're gonna have a couple other things that the actual hunt adds to it. You know, that's fine. That's my plan, and that's what I'm there for. I'll be the pack mule. You know, on hunts like this, you can share that load with guys and go from there.
Oh yeah, and like you said, you know, that with Aaron's article, Chasing the Rabbit, things become super critical when you're by yourself. Right. those items that you say, I can go without, or I don't need as much of, are more critical, because if you're hunting with a partner or a couple guys, if something happens where, you know, let's say I run out of food or you run out of food at day five and we're planning on being there for 7 days, you know, or you're running out of food, well, we can ration and we can all kind of, you know, share. And so certain things like that, you know, I wouldn't say you can chase the rabbit more when you're with a group of guys, but when you're going solo, it's something that, yeah, that balance point, you need to be real careful about it.
Yeah, that solo hunt, and I do it a lot, and I've done it a lot. It's a different ball game. It really is. It's a different ball game, and it's something that if you're willing to do it and you want to do it, try it. Spend time in the woods on your own. But there's more, it's, like I said, it's just a different ball game. I mean, when you're with partners, it's, I'm not going to say it's easier, because it's not, but it's different. It's like you said, it's being able to distribute the weight better. And I look at things from a builder standpoint, it's, you know, it's a point load on one thing versus distributing the load over three things or distributing the load over five things, you know. You can carry a lot more load over five things than you can on that point load, you know.
So. Yeah. No, and that's it, man. Like I said, it's all about continuing to learn from experiences. Nobody knows everything.
Yeah.
And you know, we try to learn off from each other and see what works. You know, there's certain things that you do that I, you know, I've picked up on. There's certain things that Aaron's does that we've all picked up on. And you know, it's just seeing what makes you as comfortable and putting you in the best position to be successful. You know, so man, I appreciate the conversation this morning. We're gonna catch up again. You know, it might be before the hunt or right after the hunt. On talking about hunting again, because we've done some technical videos with talking with guys like Chuck Cooley, and we've caught up on some tournament shooting with Chad on the ASA and IBO stuff, and actually I'm gonna talk a few minutes here about what we've got moving forward. So on the next episode, I'm gonna have another good friend of mine who I've had the benefit of hunting with a few times, Santino Castellanos. Santino is one of those guys that has been very successful over the last couple of years taking animals, and I think one of the things I can attest it to is he's not afraid to hunt public land or private land, and he's not afraid to go out and seek those opportunities to, you know, maybe it's a Class B or Class C tag here in Colorado that you can pick up extras of that a lot of people don't know about. And he's learned the system. He's, again, knocked on doors and just, you know, the whole stigma of, oh, you kill that on private land. Well, you know what? If it puts more meat in the freezer or if you get a chance at a quality animal, he's one of those guys that's proof that not afraid to seek all opportunities. So we're going to have Santino on next episode, and also at the back end of that episode, we're going to do our next giveaway, of which is going to be the elk hunt with New Mexico Trophy Outfitters. So this hunt, I was anticipating it being a mid-season hunt, of which, not trying to be selfish here, guys, but I did draw my New Mexico elk tag in a unit that's a wilderness only unit, so there's no opportunities to purchase a landowner voucher is what we were planning on doing with the outfitter. So he's got some great land in the surrounding units that the hunter that wins that hunt is still going to be hunting quality land in northern New Mexico, of which I've hunted myself a lot of this land. It's probably going to be somewhere in the first third of the month. So ironing out the details, I should have those details by the next episode, like I said, which will be into the early part of next week. New Mexico Trophy Outfitting. Once again, the last hunt was given away the antelope by CNC Outfitting. I know he still has some elk hunts available for this year, some spots up there. If you haven't drawn a tag, check out Joe at CNC Outfitting on Facebook is the best place to get a hold of him. And then lastly, and here in probably, it might be, I don't know if we'll get it out right before we go on the hunt or it'll be right after, but we're going to give away that whitetail hunt that that Braden and I were on last year in Nebraska with Bow Country Outfitter. So
that's a fun hunt. Just don't shoot the big one out from under Phil this year. Whoever wins that one, don't shoot the big one out from under Phil.
You know, that hunt was it's we've been on it a couple of years. Braden got to go last year with us, and I think he's planning on going again this year. But it was, you know, for Nebraska at a moderate price, you know, and this is kind of a whole nother topic, but I'll touch on it quickly. You know, if you consider the amount of time that it takes to go out and learn an area, maybe set up some tree stand, scout, drive out to Nebraska in our case from Denver, you know, two or three times. Whether you stay in a hotel or you stay in your truck or camp, whatever, right? You still have fuel, you have time, you have tree stands you need to purchase or borrow. You start figuring it out, and what Ron gives us for the amount of money, it's worth it for me because, you know, now we're hunting quality setups, tree stands in proven areas, you know, funnels or edge of feeding areas and transition points. So it, to me, I don't know, it's worth it to me to pay that extra few bucks. What do you think, Braden?
Oh, absolutely, because I have been that guy that has spent miles going, driving out to Nebraska and Kansas and these places to try and do it myself. And although fun and an adventure in itself, the success rate is quite a bit lower just because of that, because of, I mean, you're limited scouting, you're limited on preparation as far as hanging sets and things like that. I mean, it's very similar. If you take hunting seriously, it's very similar to mountain hunting as far as the scouting and preparation and that kind of stuff goes. Although, I'd say it's easier to do that, but it's not necessarily as far as travel time and that kind of thing goes. And to have a place to go that, like you said, is reasonably priced with the ability to shoot good deer or see good deer is outstanding. And Ron and Marty, those guys, they treat you well too, and they're good company to have. So it's definitely worth it. It because like I said, I've been that guy for many years that's done tried to do it all myself and you know had a little bit of success doing that, but not as much as you'd like. And when this stuff's all kind of done for you for that dollar value, it's a pretty good trade off.
Oh yeah, man, and that's it. You know, that's just it's good company. You know, we go up with a group of, there's four of us total that get to hunt at once up there. You know, Ron limits the amount of hunters that he brings in to keep it more of a quality hunt, and it's a blast. So I'm looking forward to all my hunts this year, but that one in particular.
As you know, Ron's not tying them to a tree either. I mean, you're still hunting them. There's still skittish whitetails.
Oh yeah, man. And I saw a few toads last year. I mean, you shot a really good buck, and that last morning, right when that weather started to roll in, that was that big buck I saw in the distance down the river that was actually on a different property. But oh man, you know, you don't think there's good bucks in that southern, south central kind of part of Nebraska. I'm here to tell you different. I've seen some. Braden took one. I think that you're going to see a lot of bucks on that hunt in that 120 to 140, 35, 140 class. But there's, you know, Braden took one that was right at 150, I think. But there's a couple bucks I've seen in there that I would guess that are into the 160 class. Yeah. So that's good buck, man, with the bow.
Yeah, and I think the biggest one, Ron, they took off there was 177 in the late season, so 175, something like that. So, I mean, that's a giant buck.
Yeah, right there, so. Yeah. No, man, it'll be fun. But, hey, man, we'll catch up again. We'll talk to you here soon, but I appreciate you coming on. And make sure you guys check. We are now on iTunes. So if you're listening or you guys want to subscribe, go to iTunes, type in Championship Bow Hunting under the podcast section, and subscribe to us. If you feel so inclined, leave a comment, hopefully a favorable one, and we will keep grinding and bring you some more episodes down the line. So thanks a lot, Braden, and we'll check you guys out. Hey, no problem, man. We'll check you guys out on the next one.
Sounds good, buddy. We'll chat with you soon.